Hare Krishna. Welcome everybody to today's episode of Krishna in Vrindavan. And today we're going to be talking about Krishna, Gargamuni doing Krishna's name giving ceremony and doing his astrological chart for Krishna and Balaram. And then after we're going to hear about some of their really endearing baby pastimes, being mischievous in Vrindavan with all the residents of Braj. So let's sing our little invocation song. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 Rakshama. Krishna, 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 Pahima. Rama Raghava Rama Raghava Rama Raghava Rakshama Krishna Keshava Krishna Keshava Krishna Keshava Pahima Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Right, so we're reading from Canto 10, Chapter 8, and starting from Text 11. So in this verse, Shukadeva Goswami is narrating, and he's saying that, having been especially requested by Nanda Maharaj to do that which he already desired to do, Gargamuni performed the name-giving ceremony for Krishna and Balaram in a solitary place. So Gargamuni was very eager to do this ceremony, you can imagine, because he knew that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was thinking, this is going to be the most amazing astrological chart I've ever read. But it had to be done in a solitary place because Kamsa was looking for Krishna and trying to kill him. So they couldn't, they were worried that Kamsa would find out. So they arranged for it to happen in the Goshala. And they basically did it in the cow barn, kind of like, I mean, we hear about baby Jesus was also born in the manger. He was basically born in the cow barn. So Krishna also had his name giving ceremony in that place. And it's a very auspicious place because cows are pure, totally pure animals. Everything that they produce is pure and purifying. So it was suitable. Especially since Krishna is a cowherd boy and he loves the cows. So Gargamuni, this is what he says. First, he gives the reading for Balaram. This child, the son of Rohini, will give all happiness to his relatives and friends by his transcendental qualities. Therefore, he will be known as Ram. Because Rama, we always tell people when we're explaining the Hare Krishna mantra that Rama means the reservoir of pleasure. So because Balaram is going to give pleasure to all of his relatives and friends, then he is called Ram. And he continues, and because he will manifest extraordinarily bodily strength, he will be known as Bala. Bala means strong. And we can pray to Lord Balaram for strength, for spiritual strength, to be able to maintain our bhakti despite all the obstacles that the material world throws at us. And another name for Balaram, he says, because he unites two families, Vasudev's family and the family of Nanda Maharaj, he will also be known as Sankarshan. Sankarshan means that it means two things coming together. So like mixing. So Balaram is, because he's Rohini is the wife of Vasudev, but he's staying there with Nanda Maharaj, and he's going to grow up with Krishna in the house of Nanda Maharaj. So he's uniting the families of Vasudeva and Nanda Maharaj. And then he talks about Krishna. So then he says, your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past, he assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow. And now he has appeared in a blackish color. It says, in another Dwapara Yuga, he appeared as Lord Ramachandra in the color of Shuka, a parrot. All such incarnations have now assembled in Krishna. So So Krishna is the source of all incarnations. He incarnates in many different forms, but all the incarnations are there in Krishna. He's the embodiment of all avatars. So it's just, it always strikes me as funny that Gargamuni is openly telling this to all the residents of Vrindavan, but still, you know, when amazing things happen, they don't think, oh, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God and the source of all incarnations, and he incarnates in every age. They might think about it for a second, but they immediately forget. Krishna is just my son. He says, for many reasons, yeah, Shuka, the color of a parrot, is green. For many reasons, this beautiful son of yours sometimes appeared previously as the son of Vasudev. Therefore, those who are learned sometimes call this child Vasudev. For this son of yours, there are many forms and names according to his transcendental qualities and activities. These are known to me, but people in general do not understand them. So Saint Krishna has many names, just like Lord Chaitanya says, Nam Namakari Bahuda Nijasarva Shaktis, that you have many millions of names like Krishna and Govinda, and within these transcendental names are invested all of your transcendental energies. So Krishna blesses us with these many, many names. To increase the transcendental bliss of the cowherd men of Gokul, this child will always act auspiciously for you. And by his grace only, you will surpass all difficulties. So that's one thing that they remember about Krishna, that somehow or other, Krishna enables them to pass all difficulties. So whenever they're in trouble, you'll see throughout Krishna's pastimes, whenever there's any trouble in Vrindavan, they all just call out to Krishna. Even though they're, you know, grown-ups and he's a little child, but they're like, Krishna. Yeah. And he says he's done this before, as recorded in history, whenever there was an irregular, incapable government, Indra having been dethroned, and people were being harassed and disturbed by thieves, this child appeared in order to protect the people and enable them to flourish. And he curbed the rogues and thieves. So Krishna also says that about himself, that appears again and again, yada yada hi dharmasya, whenever there's a decline of religion. And haritranaya sadunam vinashayat chaduskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge, that this is why he appears, to annihilate the demons, to protect the devotees, to reestablish religious principles. So Gargamuni is affirming the same thing. And the Bhagavatam says this too, that Krishna is too Bhagavan Swayam, and that Indrari Vyakulam Lokam Mridayanti Yuge Yuge, that he protects the world from the enemies of Indra, who are the demons. Because demons cannot harm the demigods, who always have Lord Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to Krishna is extremely fortunate, because such persons are very much affectionate towards Krishna. They cannot be defeated by demons like the associates of Kamsa, or by the internal enemies, the senses. So in the Nectar of Instruction, we've been talking about the first verse, Vacho Vegam Manasikrota Vegam Jiva Vegam Udarapasta Vegam Etanyo Vishaheta Dira Sarvam Apimam Pritivim Sashishya, that all about controlling the senses. And we've been talking about how these senses, the tongue, the belly, the genitals, the mind, anger, are very difficult to control. But Gargamuni is saying here that anybody who's attached to Krishna and has affection for Krishna, they cannot be defeated by, you know, demons, external demons like Kamsa or any demoniac people, nor can they be defeated by their internal enemies, you know, the six enemies of the conditioned soul, which are Kam, Krodh, Loba, Madha, Mohan, and Matsarya. Lust, anger, greed, envy, madness, and illusion. So as long as we are attached to Krishna, as long as we have Krishna on our side, then these enemies cannot harm us. So that's something to remember, just like the Vrijvasis. You know, whenever there's any difficulty, just call out to Krishna. If something is attracting you, you know, some sense object that, you know, is not favorable to Krishna consciousness is attracting you, then just Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. Just call out to Krishna and Krishna will come running to the rescue, just like he keeps saving the Vrajavasis time and time again. And in that way, like, if we're always taking shelter of Krishna and depending on Krishna, then it's the same as the Vrajavasis living in Vrindavan with Krishna. That Krishna will feel Krishna's presence in our lives in a very personal way. So then Gargamuni concludes, therefore, O Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayan. In his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayan. You should all raise this child very carefully and cautiously. So Gargamuni is basically saying, your son is Narayan. He is the supreme personality of Godhead in all respects. And you should just take really good care of him because he's not an ordinary baby. So now this chapter will continue talking about the childhood pastimes of Krishna and Balaram. And it's really funny because after this whole thing about how Krishna is Narayan and he appears in so many different incarnations and all the incarnations are within him and you just call him and he's going to save you because he's the Lord and he's been doing this for millennium after millennium. Now we're going to hear about Krishna, baby Krishna and Balaram and Vrindavan. So this is a contrast. So I'm starting here from text 21 if anyone's following along. After a short time passed, both brothers, Rama, Balaram, and Krishna, began to crawl on the ground of Raj with the strength of their hands and knees and thus enjoy their childhood play. So they're just crawling around in the dirt of Vrindavan. When Krishna and Balaram, with the strength of their legs, crawled in the muddy places created in Vraj by cow dung and cow urine, their crawling resembled the crawling of serpents, and the sound of their ankle bells was very charming. So there's so many cows in Vrindavan, and you know what cows do, they just walk around, and you know they don't have a set place where they pass stool and urine, they're just walking and passing urine on the ground and passing cow dung on the ground. And so with all those cows, that the ground becomes muddy from the dirt mixed with urine and cow dung. And Krishna and Balaram, they're not, you know, they're just crawling. They're not thinking about, you know, oops, there's a puddle of cow urine there. They're just like little babies. They're just crawling straight through it. God, maybe she's sitting here trying to eat lunch. they're just crawling straight through it and getting all filthy, you know, basically getting all, you know, transcendentally cow dungy. It says their crawling resembled the crawling of serpents. So the way a snake goes along the ground, it's just like full body contact with the ground. You know, they're just like totally sliding through the the cow dung and everything and the dirt. Very much, but it was very charming. Their ankle bells were tinkling, and it says, very much pleased by the sound of other people's ankle bells. So the tinkling of their ankle bells was charming, but they also got attracted to the sound of other people's ankle bells. And they used to follow them. So they would hear this tinkle, tinkle, tinkle of the women's ankle bells, and they would follow it. They're like, oh, that sound is so nice. And they would just be crawling along, not looking where they're going, crawling through the cow dung and following these women's ankle bells. As if they were going to their mothers. But then they would go a certain distance, and then the women would start commenting like, oh, look how sweet Krishna and Balaram are, how they're crawling along. And then Krishna and Balaram would look at each other and be like, wait a minute, that's not Mother Yashoda. That's not Mother Rohini. That's not our mothers. And they would become like afraid that, oh no, this is the wrong person, oops. And they would turn around and go back home to Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini. So, and the women would just laugh at them, like silly little babies. I don't know if anybody has ever done that. Once I was small, and I was in a department store, and I picked up something, and it was some clothing or something that I liked. And I was showing it to my mother, and I was telling her about it and why I liked it. And then I looked up and I was like, oops, it was another lady. It was a random strange lady. And she was like, are you okay? Anyways, it was one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. So yeah, I can understand how Krishna and Balaram feel here. But they're like, oh no, we have to get back to our mother. But then the next verse says, dressed with muddy earth, mixed with cow dung and cow urine, the babies looked very beautiful. So they were dressed with mud and cow dung, and that was basically it. they didn't have any clothes on. They were just dressed with the mud. Because in India, still nowadays, you see little babies, they don't put any clothes on them. They just walk around, they have a little string around their bellies, yeah. And that's it. And because they're babies, you know, it doesn't matter. And anyways, they're going to get so dirty. And especially if they're not potty trained, then it's just much easier for them to just pee on the ground and not have to wash all those clothes afterwards. So that was kind of the situation. It's easier to just give them a little bath afterwards and not have to worry about laundry. Of course, I don't know what happens with laundry in Gokul, but in any case, Mother Yashoda and Rohini didn't have to worry about it. So it says, dressed with muddy earth mixed with cow dung and cow urine, the babies looked very beautiful. And when they went to their mothers, both Yashoda and Rohini picked them up with great affection, embraced them, and allowed them to suck the milk flowing from their breasts. While sucking the breast, the babies smiled, and their small teeth were visible. Their mothers, upon seeing those beautiful teeth, enjoyed great transcendental bliss. So yeah, anybody who's been around babies, it's, you know, it's very sweet when they open their mouth, they yawn, or they laugh, and you see the little teeth. And yeah, it's described here that the mothers used to count Krishna and Balaram's teeth. Like, oh, he's got one tooth. Oh, he's got another tooth. And then, you know, he would yawn, and they'd be like, oh, there's another one there. So it just, they were so much in this mood of Vatsalya Bhav, of seeing Krishna as their darling little baby boy, that they would relish all these little baby things, little teeth growing in, and yeah. So then, within the house of Nandamaraj, the cowherd ladies would enjoy seeing the pastimes of the babies, Ram and Krishna. The babies would catch the ends of the calves' tails, and the calves would drag them here and there. When the ladies saw these pastimes, they certainly stopped their household activities and laughed and enjoyed the incidents. So just imagine you're in your house and you're churning butter, or you're, you know, chopping up some vegetables for the sabji. And then all of a sudden you hear this like squealing, you know, and going on outside, and you look out the window and there's this cute little calf. And then holding onto his tail is this cutest little baby that the universe has ever seen. Baby Krishna and Balaram is getting pulled through the mud, holding onto the calves. And so they would be like, oh my god, they would stop, and it was you know, some entertainment for them to watch these things. So yeah, of course Mother Rohini, you know, because Krishna and Balaram were very active, they were very, you know, they were just all over the place. As soon as they could learn how to crawl, they were everywhere that they could be. And so it says here that Yashoda and Rohini were unable to protect the babies from calamities threatened by horned cows, by fire, by animals with claws and teeth, such as monkeys, dogs, and cats, by thorns, swords, and other weapons on the ground. And so they were always in anxiety, and their household engagements were disturbed. At that time, they were fully equipoised in the transcendental ecstasy known as the distress of material affection. For this was aroused within their minds, the distress of maternal affection. So, yeah, they're always worried that they're going to step on a thorn, or that some monkey's going to come and bite them, or, you know, they're going to touch some fire, all the dangerous things out there in the world. And so they're trying to do their household things, but every second they're like, oh no, where's Krishna? Where's Balaram? And they're running out to go check and see what they were doing, and they weren't getting hurt. And then they'd see that, okay, they're playing peacefully, and they're going back to work. And, oh, but something else could be happening. So that's like the mother's, anybody who's been a mother knows that that's sort of like mother's mentality, that you're always just thinking of all the bad things that could be happening to your child at that moment. And you're like, you know, always like, no, I got to see what's going on. So, yeah. But this anxiety, Shukadeva Goswami is saying, is because they were basically constantly in anxiety, they were fully equipoised in transcendental ecstasy. So this anxiety for Krishna is actually like one of the main ecstasies of the Vatsalya Bhav, that you're just always intensely thinking of Krishna and worrying about Krishna and, you know, trying to do everything that you can to protect him from anything that could cause him harm. That's Mother Yashoda's constant meditation. So I see that Evan has his hand up. You want to say something, Evan?
Yeah. I was wondering about the verse says material affection, but it's actually supposed to be maternal, correct?
I think so, yeah, because here it says all these pastimes of Krishna and the great enjoyment exhibited by the mothers are transcendental. Nothing about them is material.
Okay. And then I was...
let me just read this. In the spiritual world, there's anxiety, there's crying, and there are similar feelings to those in the material world. But because the reality of these feelings is in the transcendental world, of which this world is only an imitation, Mother Yashoda and Rohini enjoyed them transcendentally. Yeah, so he's saying this, that it looks like the distress of material affection, but it's actually totally transcendental because it's in relationship to Krishna. So all the feelings that we experience here in the material world, they're also there in the spiritual world. There's a whole range of emotions that are, you know, being played out by Krishna's associates in the spiritual world, but they're all transcendental. Even so-called negative emotions are different flavors of ecstasy. So, yeah.
Thank you. I was also going to ask, because I was thinking about this earlier today, how we're kind of like children that have left the shelter of our parents. Like in this material world, we run away from home, and Radha and, you know, they're kind of wanting us to go back, and they're wanting us to be happy. And I was just meditating on, like, if a mother had a child that ran away from home, they're probably really, you know, heartbroken and worried about the child. So can that apply also, like, their affection for us is, I guess, a transcendental ecstasy?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the mood of Radharani, you know, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Radharani is said to be the mother of the universe, and at the same time she's the personification of compassion. So when Lord Chaitanya comes in the mood of Radharani, that's what he's doing. You know, he's just trying to save all the conditioned souls and bring them back to the spiritual world because he's in anxiety. It's specifically described there. Krishnas Kaviraj says that Lord Chaitanya is in anxiety about the state of the conditioned souls and the suffering that they're going through in the material world, and he wants to bring them back. So it's like that. He's in Radharani's mood. Radharani is the mother of the universe. And so, like,
a mother. I only need the red ones.
Just a second. Can whoever's talking to you, please?
No, you're wearing red.
Hey. Who is that? Oh, okay. That was on Evans. So Radharani is like our mother, and she's in anxiety that we're suffering here in the material world. And so she wants us to go back. Yeah. And Lord Chaitanya demonstrates that in his.
Okay,
let's go on. So I'm reading it. I'm at text 26 now. Within a very short time, both Ram and Krishna began to walk very easily in Gokul on their legs by their own strength without the need to crawl. So now they're walking. So now, you know, when babies crawl, they can only go so far. But as soon as small children start to walk, they are all over the place. They like really, you know, go places. So it says that thereafter, Lord Krishna, along with Balaram, began to play with the other children of cowherd men. So they started becoming, you know, socially engaged. They started going to other people's houses and playing with the other little boys, thus awakening the transcendental bliss of the cowherd women. Because now, not only was he, going around in Nandamaraj and Mother Yashoda's courtyard and the near vicinity to their house, but now he was going to other people's houses. So the women who were doing their, household duties at home, they'd just be in the middle of doing stuff, and Krishna would come over to play with their sons or to do his other activities, which we're going to hear about in a minute. It says, observing the very attractive childish restlessness of Krishna, all the gopis in the neighborhood, to hear about Krishna's activities again and again, would approach Mother Yashoda and speak to her as follows. So this is funny. So now we're going to hear about how the older cowherd women complained to Mother Yashoda. But actually, they expressed it in the form of complaints, but actually they just want to talk about Krishna. They love Krishna so much, and they just want to have some excuse to do some Krishna katha, just to speak about Krishna. So they go over there and they say things like, our dear friend Yashoda, your son sometimes comes to our houses before the milking of the cows and releases the calves. And when the master of the house becomes angry, your son merely smiles. So because, it's a cowherd community, and their bread and butter is, milking the cow, getting milk from cows. And then they trade that with other villages and things to get other things that they need. So they need to have, they need to milk their cows and get the milk and keep it. But Krishna goes and he lets all the calves go just before milking time. And the calves go there and suck and suck and take all the milk. And the cows are getting more than they even need to drink. And they're all getting stomach aches there. and then when the cowherd men go, they're like, oh no, now there's not much milk left. And then it says, but Krishna just laughs. Sometimes Krishna devises some process by which he steals palatable curd, butter, and milk, which he then eats and drinks. So Krishna is very famous. This is his makan chor, butter thief pastimes, where he breaks into people's houses and he just goes and he devises some processes, they say. He does all kinds of different schemes to steal people's butter and yogurt and milk from their storerooms and from their kitchens and from the shed and wherever he can find it. Says, when the monkeys assemble, he divides it with them. And when the monkeys have their bellies so full that they won't take more, he breaks the pots. So, yeah, Krishna, he takes the butter and then he eats so much butter until he's stuffed. And then he calls the monkeys and distributes it to the butter. And then the monkeys eat so much butter that they can't even think about eating another biteful. And then when the people in the house come, they're like, Krishna, I can't believe you're just giving all of our you're eating all of our butter and giving it to the monkeys. And then Krishna's like, why would I want your useless butter? And then he takes a handful of it and he offers it to the monkey, and the monkey's just like, oof, because he's already eaten so much. He's just saying, your butter is so bad, even the monkeys won't eat it. And then the housewife is just like, what to do? Then it says, sometimes if he gets no opportunity to steal butter or milk from a house, he will become angry at the householders. And for his revenge, he will agitate the small children by pinching them. Then when the children begin crying, Krishna will go away. So yeah, sometimes he goes to a house to try to get butter, but maybe there's no butter to be found, or maybe the man of the house is standing guard, and so Krishna doesn't have an opportunity. And so then he just sneaks into the other room and pinches the small babies that are sleeping in the cradle. And then as soon as they start crying, he just like takes off. So that's stuff that Krishna does. When the milk and curd are kept high on a swing hanging from the ceiling and Krishna and Balaram cannot reach it, they arrange to reach it by piling up various planks and turning upside down the mortar for grinding spices. Being quite aware of the contents of a pot, they pick holes in it. While the elderly gopis go about their household affairs, Krishna and Balaram sometimes go into a dark room, brightening the place with the valuable jewels and ornaments on their bodies and taking advantage of this light by stealing. So Krishna, Mother Yashoda would dress Krishna and Balaram up with, you know, lots of jewelry. And so the jewels would, of course, some jewels, whenever we hear about jewels in the Vedic context, they always seem to be luminous, you know, like the jewels on the heads of the serpents in the subterranean heavenly planets. They don't have a sun in those places, but everything is lit up by the jewels on the heads of these serpents. But of course, Krishna's jewels are reflecting his own effulgence. That, you know, Krishna, it's not that the ornaments make Krishna more beautiful, but Krishna makes the ornaments more beautiful. And the light that the ornaments emit, that the jewels emit, is coming from Krishna anyway. So, but, you know, the storerooms are dark, and that's how Krishna sees, is by the light reflecting off these jewels. And so they go and pile up all these boards and boxes and grinding mortars, and they climb up there, and then they get some stone or a stick, and they break a hole in the butter pot, and then the butter, the yogurt starts dripping out, and then they're just catching it and eating it and making a big mess. That's what they do. When Krishna is caught in his naughty activities, the master of the house will say to him, "Oh, you are a thief," and artificially express anger at Krishna. So he says artificially, but not really angry at Krishna. They love this. This is like the highlight of their day, when Krishna's in their house and Krishna's stealing their butter. And actually, the whole reason they're making butter is in the hopes that Krishna's going to come and steal it. And that's like, yeah, well, that's their meditation. When the women in these houses are churning butter, they're thinking, "Oh, I really hope Krishna, I'm going to try to make this butter nice and thick and creamy, and I hope that Krishna's going to come and eat it," like that. So artificially expressing anger. Krishna will then reply, "I'm not a thief, you're a thief." Which is true, because everything belongs to Krishna. So, yeah. Sometimes being angry, Krishna passes urine and stool in a neat, clean place in our houses. So they're telling all this to Mother Yashoda. So yeah, if Krishna can't get the butter, you know, if they go in there and he's trying to get the butter and he gets caught and then they chastise him, then he'll run into a nice place, nice clean place in the house, like, you know, the cooking area in the kitchen. And then he'll just squat and just poop there just to be naughty. So yeah, this is another one of Krishna's pastimes. And it's so funny because, you know, we were just hearing how Garga Muni was saying, this child is exactly like Narayan. But then you hear this pastimes that immediately follow. It's like, in what way? You know, it's like you might wonder, like, does Narayan do that? I don't think so. So let's see. But now, our dear friend Yashoda, this expert thief is sitting before you like a very good boy. So whenever they go to complain, then Krishna's always just there sitting like a little angel next to Mother Yashoda with his big brown eyes. And he's looking at Mother Yashoda like a little puppy dog and, you know, batting his little eyelashes. And Mother Yashoda's like, "Really? My Krishna? I think you must be mistaking him for some other boy. My Krishna doesn't do it. Just look at him. What a darling angel he is." And says, sometimes all the gopis would look at Krishna sitting there, his eyes fearful, so that, yeah, he would not only be like an angel, but he would be like afraid. And Mother Yashoda didn't like to see him afraid, because, you know, she's worried that if he becomes too afraid, then he's gonna, you know, have emotional problems. So he's sitting there, his eyes fearful, so that his mother would not chastise him. And when they saw Krishna's beautiful face, instead of chastising him, they would simply look upon his face and enjoy transcendental bliss. This was another reason why they liked Krishna's naughtiness, because it gave them a good excuse to go to Yashoda's house and see Krishna, which was the perfection of their vision. So it would be great, you know, Krishna first would come to their house, they'd get to see him, they'd get to interact with him, they'd get to have some fun with him. And then after Krishna would go home, and then they would go to Mother Yashoda and complain, and then they get to see Krishna again. So like that, these cowherd women were getting a lot of personal association with Krishna, and they were very happy. It says, Mother Yashoda would mildly smile at all this fun, and she would not want to chastise her blessed transcendental child. So, yeah. Yeah, when we say that Gopi Janavallabha, one of the Krishna's name is Gopi Janavallabha, it's not just talking about Radharani and, you know, the Sakis and the Rasa dance and all that, but it's also these elder Gopis, the ones who are Mother Yashoda's friends. They're also Gopis, they're cowherd women. And Krishna basically invented all of these pastimes. He enacted all these pastimes just to please them, just to bring out their maternal affection and give them a chance for them to think about him and talk about him and see him and like that. And that was the highlight of their day. So I think we have to wrap it up now. We just have a couple minutes before the time we were supposed to stop. Any questions on these pastimes? Just raise your hand or just unmute yourself.
Well, I just wanted to share that I recently learned the meaning of the word Narayan, and it means like the resting place of man or humans, you know. So we're saying like how is Krishna like Narayan, but I guess he's like giving them, they're all like resting in this beautiful transcendental ecstasy.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's the shelter. Narayan gives shelter to all the people, and Krishna's providing his shelter because the real shelter is love. You know, that's what everybody wants. Shelter is not a roof over your head. It's a loving community. And Krishna's enabling all these residents of Vrindavan to enter into the most intimate, loving relationship with him. Yeah. Oh, Kamesh, she has a question. Go ahead.
So yesterday you once mentioned, I don't know, one of these ones that having come from Vrindavan, they worship Krishna.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering why to worship Krishna, because for us it's kind of like it's to help us to remember the full Krishna.
Yeah.
But for them, Krishna is so very good.
Yeah. So did you hear that? Kameshi's saying why did, okay, I'll repeat. Kameshi's asking that, you know, why do the residents of Vrindavan, like Nandamaraj and Mother Yashoda, have to worship Lord Vishnu as their household deity? Because they have Krishna with them. Like, we worship the Lord to get purified and, you know, to all that, but they don't need to get, they're already pure devotees. So the thing is, like, bhakti, I'm just going to look this way. So the thing is that bhakti is, it's not just a process, it's also the goal. So we worship Krishna not just to get purified so that we can be pure, but we worship Vishnu, or we worship Krishna to get purified so that we can purely worship Krishna. Like that. So, yeah. And also our constitutional position is that we are eternally servants of the Lord. So Nandamaraj and Madhya Yashoda, they are also eternally servants of the Lord. And they understand that. They don't know that Krishna is the Lord. So they're thinking we need to worship the Lord, and the worshipable deity is Lord Vishnu. So like that. Yeah, that's very interesting.
So it's just Lord Vishnu or Lord Vishnu with? Because here today you saw with us one Vishnu Tata with
the consort, yeah. I'm not sure if they would have Lakshmi in Narayan, or, you know, Vishnu with Lakshmi. I'm not really sure about that. But definitely they knew who Lakshmi was, so it seems likely. All right, there's another couple of questions here. We've got Avatar Krishna Das first, and then Janaki.
So my question, after listening to all the glories and pastimes, is we are instructed to always keep these pastimes in our mind.
Yeah.
While we are involved in day-to-day activities, doing things.
Yeah.
How do you contemplate? How do you, what is the advice that it allows somebody to always remember about them? It is said you should chant, but that practically is not possible, at least for me, because of the things that I'm involved in. So how do you, what is the best way to remember these? Is it just by attending and being in conversation with others to talk about it, which is practically not always possible because you have to do other things?
Yeah.
What would be your suggestion? What would be your advice? Or anybody's advice?
It's nice to hear about Krishna's pastimes whenever we can. But, you know, like if you have a, you know, like a job in the world where you need to concentrate on what you're doing, then obviously you can't be thinking about Krishna crawling through the cow dung of Vrindavan while you need to like focus on something that's mentally demanding. Then we just have to find ways to connect whatever we're doing to Krishna. You know, that you think I'm doing this work for Krishna. I need to earn money to maintain my family who are devotees of Krishna, or, you know, to support projects in the service of Krishna, or to buy bhoga for Krishna, like that. So it's like everything that we do is directly or indirectly for Krishna. And that's also a meditation on Krishna. You know, but, like you look at
But that's not focusing on the pastimes of Krishna, right? I'm just thinking more specifically about how to keep them in mind. How do you connect your daily life to what happened in a specific leela, or what you learned from a specific leela? Is there anything that is mentioned by Shastra or Gurus?
Somebody wants to say.
I heard a lecture one time about the qualities of Krishna, and just like, I don't have like specific examples, but maybe if you're like, you're working and your coworker is like late, or some kind of like mischief is happening, or somebody stole your lunch out of the workroom or something like that. They said that you could just think about the qualities of Krishna. And in that way, you can think of his pastimes through that. Like, he's mischievous, he's trouble, he's the source of all those things, but all those things are like also very beautiful. So in that way, you can connect Krishna to that.
That's a very good point. Thank you. Who said that? That I can't see. Who?
Janaki.
Who was it?
Janaki.
Oh, Janaki. Thank you. Thank you, Janaki.
There's another thing too that's related to that. And this is something that Mother Ermola was telling us about in our Nectar of Devotion class. She said that, and this is very useful for managing emotions. And, you know, like sometimes emotions can be just, you know, if we're just upset or disturbed or whatever, or any emotion. So let's say we're in anxiety. So whatever the flavor of our anxiety is, we can think of a pastime of Krishna in which somebody was feeling anxiety. So for instance, here, you know, Mother Yashoda is feeling anxiety about Krishna's safety. So if you're, you know, you have a child who's at school and maybe they're, you know, worried, maybe they're being bullied at school or maybe something happened, but, you know, you can't do anything about it. So what to do, you know, just meditate on Mother Yashoda's anxiety for Krishna. Or, you know, if you're angry with somebody, something happened, or angry about a situation that is unfair, then you can think about a pastime of Krishna where, you know, somebody got angry, and you can just sort of dovetail just, and that helps to dissipate all these material emotions by connecting them to Krishna. So that's one thing.
Wait,
Janaki's saying that her phone's going to go dead and she really wants to ask a question. Why don't you just plug it in?
Anyways, sure. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm not at home right now.
Oh.
But I was just thinking, especially talking about how Krishna would just get mad and like pass urine or poop on the floor or whatever. Sorry, that was Muji. Isn't there a pastime of Nimai who also would do that? Or like he had some kind of incense where he like peed on somebody's table?
I don't know about that. I don't remember that pastime. But I mean, yeah, it could happen. I wouldn't doubt it. I was also similarly very naughty when he was He was young. But actually, there's a Jiva Goswami comments on this thing of Krishna's passing stool and urine. It says that he passes illusory stool and urine just for his pastimes and to satisfy the Mayavadis, or just foolish people who think that when Krishna comes, he accepts a material body. So sometimes Krishna does these, you know, things just to cheat the atheists, basically, especially Mayavadis. So Krishna's very tricky. He tricks the people, steals their butter, and he tricks the Mayavadis by peeing on the floor.
I love that.
He tricks all of us. And for us, he's always tricking us into surrendering more. We have Loka, Mother Loka.
The question that had come up about how we remember Krishna's pastimes when we're working, you know, for many years I worked at the senior levels of the federal government. Oh, yeah. And so I had to concentrate on the work that I was doing. But even in those environments, you know, what I learned is that so many of the experiences that I was going through were comparable or parallel to some of the experiences that we read about in scripture. So, you know, if there was a particularly difficult time, I might remember Queen Kunti's prayers. Or if I were feeling challenged by another person, I would think about the way in which the Pandavas were treated in being cheated of their kingdom and in what to do next and all the hardships that they had to go through. Yeah. Or, you know, I try to think about scriptural stories that would help me feel more settled or accepting of the circumstances that were being thrown my way. And there are so many that come every day that you can get into a lot of stuff from scripture. So that's just from a personal experience that it does work. It's not that you're thinking every single moment, but that, you know, as you're feeling put upon or upset or challenged or disrespected or whatever, and there's more than enough of that in the levels I was working at. I just found there were many scriptural stories that would help me put it in perspective.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's really good. Yeah. I mean, if you read the scriptures, it's like every day you can find something, you know, that just relates to your life, because that's what the scriptures are. They're like they're guides, they're manuals for our lives. And those pastimes that happen, even though they take place, you know, thousands of years ago, or even hundreds of thousands of years ago, they're still very much indicative of the human condition.
Exactly, because the challenges are the same. The circumstances might be different. I might not be standing on a battlefield with a bow and arrow and horses running around, but it's still a battlefield. It just happens to be a modern situation, but the lessons and the circumstances are the same.
Yeah. That is a very, very practical example, way of thinking. Thank you.
All right. Anything else?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Ali one time said that everything is a pastime with Krishna. Like, as you were saying, Krishna tricks us into surrendering more. So every single thing that happens to us in our work life, daily life, it's coming from Krishna. So it's coming from Krishna for a reason.
Yeah.
So we can think about why, and we can think about, even if you're, you know, we're doing service for Krishna, I'm like cleaning dressing bottles and things like that. I'm not, well, in that case, I can actually be thinking of Krishna directly. But even if I'm not, like, I can put on a lecture, a kirtan or something, but even if I'm not, I'm still being Krishna conscious, because I'm doing service for Krishna. I'm not doing service for me.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I wanted to tell you one little thing just in case you got worried about the babies. Because it said that Krishna used to pinch the babies and make them cry. So actually, the babies get pleasure by getting pinched by Krishna. And just like, you know, in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, there's the story of Shivananda saying that he gets kicked by Lord Nityananda. And he feels like so much, he's like ecstatic that Lord Nityananda kicked him. And then also we have the pastime of Kolavecha Sridhar, who used to sell bananas and banana leaves. And after a while, Lord Chaitanya, being very pleased with him, asked him for a benediction. And Kulavecha Sridhar said, you know, the only benediction that I ask for is that you keep coming to my stall and keep stealing my bananas and keep insulting me. Just so that I can see you and engage in these playful pastimes every day. So yeah, sometimes, like, you know, the gopis even say, you know, don't become Krishna's devotee because he's going to make you cry. But crying for Krishna is the greatest happiness. So we're very fortunate to be able to relish all these transcendental emotions in Krishna's service. So on that note, I better wrap it up. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Krishna ki jai.
Jai.
Thank you all for attending, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, BB. I will.
Very well.